me, the eternal question for all of us is, who am I really? And life affords a constant series of moments of awakening, periods of expansion, maturing, and then passing through that phase of initiation. And then you must go on to the next. And life is a series, and that's one of Joseph Campbell's great messages for me, that life itself is a process of initiation. We enter wherever we do into our particular families, our particular cultures, our particular religions, at what moment in time, and then for some, maybe not all, but for some, something happens, a trauma of some kind, something that life is knocking on the door of our mind, hello, wake up, there's something much more than you have been exposed to previously. So to even state where I am now and where I've come from, I shake my head in disbelief. And I think of Joseph Campbell. I think of the native elders I was sent to. I was so domesticated and so traumatized in many ways to follow the way you're supposed to go, that it has taken me decades to come to a realization that they saw something in me that I didn't even understand or know about. Joe used to speak of a destiny. And when I was sent to him, I knew nothing of mythology. I was ignorant. I think I'm still ignorant in many ways. And a series of events had happened. I was on the career path in New York City. I thought, you know, I was getting social recognition for my creativity and what have you. And then it all fell apart. And I was depressed, I was desolate, what was wrong with me, that. And then a series of strange coincidences happened, which I began to live by coincidence. And I'll narrow this down. I happened to meet a psychologist who a friend of mine was staying in her apartment in New York City. And she opened the door of her apartment the first time, and we were wearing the exact same colors. And she said, oh my goodness, she said, I've got to introduce you to this woman, Jean Houston, who's quite well known in the States. And a few days later, Jean called me. I went to her home upstate New York, and she opened the front door of her house, and she said, oh my goodness, here's an old shaman. I never had heard of that word. I freaked out inside. Ugh, I got seen by somebody, you know. And she, we had several hours together to visit. And then she said, as I was leaving to drive back down to New York, she said, why don't you stop somewhere along the Palisade? We have a beautiful parkway there along the river. And just get out and talk to the universe and say, if this lady's not crazy, give me a sign. Which happened when I walked in the apartment that night. The telephone rang, and there was the first sign. So I began to work with her. She had an idea for what could be what we called possible societies, how people could reorganize in communities. So much had been lost through separations and what have you. I realized then that I was also looking for my own family, not the family of my birth, but my real family. And it was Gene who suggested that I maybe should go meet this guy, Joe Campbell. And he was not what he became. He was Joseph Campbell, yeah. But then he became really well known, you know. And I went to the first lecture with him and two other friends of his.
When was this?
Pardon?
When was this?
Oh, when? Maybe 1971, 72. Around that time? No, about 75, because I was 40 at that time. So I'd begun to learn about meditation and those things. And he was talking about the chakras and all this. He gets so much knowledge. It was brilliant. And during a break, I went up to him. I said, Mr. Campbell, you're talking about this and this. But what about up here? And he said, what do you know about that? I said, I don't know anything, but there's something up here. And that was when he first invited me to go to his home. And I realized how afraid I was at that time of my own ignorance. What do I know? But that was the beginning for us. And then his wife, who was a very famous modern dancer, in fact, just the other day, she's now 103 years old, still alive on Hawaii, her homeland. They both, I was invited to teach at their center in New York City, and the world of the shaman was just opening up before they were considered crazy people. Then one night in a lecture, Joe was speaking about the Lakota legend of the broken hoop, the wheel of life was broken some way. And each individual's journey, which is also the hero's journey, is to discover who I really am, those questions. And then we come to the point where we find out that nothing is broken as much as to be reconnected. So that was that one night in that class with Joe that I had this spontaneous vision happen in the middle of the lecture. And I had been traveling around the United States, up in parts of Canada with these different groups with Gene. And he said, you have a vision. You've got to find out what that means. In my experience, much of the Western world has lost that. An elder, a mentor to say, I see you, to recognize the individual and then encourage them to go on. And one of Joe's early recognitions for me was about destiny. He said, everyone has a future. Native people talked about that also. You have a future. And there will be some people who have a destiny. And there's something that only you can do because of who you are. And what was so, I look back in humor, but he said, either you go to your destiny gracefully or you'll be dragged by your heels. You get dragged into that journey. And I said to Joe, I said, well, you know, Joe, I didn't know about destinies. I didn't know anything, but I was in free fall. I didn't know who I was, what was going to happen next. But I obviously landed where I was supposed to. Then a series of things had happened. And I began with meditation and all the other worlds began to open to me. I met various people from different traditions, from the Yoruba tradition in Africa, the Tibetan people, different people I met along the way. And they just accept, they said, don't become one of us. You have your own journey. Those elders recognized me. They saw something and say, I didn't know what they were talking about. And at one moment, for an example, through some very interesting synchronicity, I meet this old man who is a world-renowned authority on pre-Columbian art. He came to my apartment to pick up an object that a woman in Philadelphia had given me. He was going to sell it for her. And going out of my apartment building, he falls on the street and breaks his hip. So the doorman calls me. I go down and I'm there until the ambulance comes. And I never met the man in my life, but there was something, a connection with him. So I began to visit him in the hospital. And one day I'm sitting there and this man from the Museum of Natural History comes in with this big bag and he dumps about $3 million worth of gold on the bed, gold artifacts and all. And he said, okay, which one is real, which one is fake? And this man, he knew, a fake from a real. And I found myself spontaneously saying to him, gee, I've wanted to go to Peru for a long time, you know? He said, well, when do you want to go? 6 days later, I landed in Lima, and he had called his friends, and I was welcomed in different homes, Peruvian homes. And I stayed there for 6 weeks the first time. And then I met this aged Quechua, the native people of the Andes, recognized as a healer. And a phenomenon happened there where I had a guide, a translator. But after a while, he just stopped. He said he had never seen this before. But she would talk to me in her tongue, I would speak English, and we understood each other, totally. I fell in love with, she was 90 years old at the time. I fell madly in love with her. That's where I was. My God, I never had experienced this kind of energy or connection. And I've shared this teaching throughout my life, ever since that happened, almost 45 years ago now. That whenever I go to a new place, I'm a trespasser. And you are walking on the ashes of many ancient civilizations. And she said to me, when you go there, simply introduce yourself to the spirits of that place. Tell them why you're there and offer them, I say thank you in advance. And that was like, whoa, I never heard of that in my life. And then she just happened to add, and if you would like, she said, you can say to those spirits, if there is something I can do for you while I am here, let me know. So I'm going to jump 2 years, and I've been invited to go to the university in Vancouver, British Columbia, in the advanced psychology department, and began to share stories about medicine people, shamans and all that. All these doors were opening. And the first day I arrived, I was having lunch with the dean and his wife, Jean, and I having lunch with the dean in their home. And I didn't do that ritual, so I asked permission. Out in the backyard, I hid behind a bush. I was kind of shy in that way. And I did what I was told. And then 2 mornings later, I awake in my room in the university and I hear a voice, a very clear, soft voice say, go north of the airport. That's all it said. At breakfast, I asked the dean, what's north of the airport? Oh, it's an old Indian reserve. Bunch of alcoholics over there, da, 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 da. Okay, something's happening. And again, synchronicity plays such a part of the role. In that class was the under minister of Indian affairs for the whole province of British Columbia. And he was a stranger then. And I went to him in a break. I said, I understand you have connection with the reserve over here. Yeah, I said, well, I'd like to make contact with them. He said, I wouldn't bother. He said, they're all shut down. They don't want outsiders. And I had a difficult time then saying I heard a voice. That was a bit loony to me. that, well, I've got to risk this. I said, well, I've heard a voice, a guidance. And if you'll make that call for me, connection with that, at least I will know that I did what I was told. Within 5 minutes, he came back shaking his head, because the liaison with the band, with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they each had a liaison on every tribe. She was at her desk, which was very rare, and the medicine man was standing there. And the medicine man said, well, tell him I've been waiting 2 years for him to show up. And I'd been in Peru 2 years before that. And that, Kali, has opened a door, first of all, of expansion of consciousness for me. How the part I played in that band of Native people, the prophecy that I fulfilled for them. It's curious, just yesterday, I got a call from that man who was at the university for 45 years ago. It was his birthday, so he called me from Vancouver. I still go to that reserve. The old folks are dead. And all the younger members of the family, the tribe, when Charlie's around, they know it. And I played another part of the revival of weaving, because the Christian missionaries stopped them weaving because they said that was evil. They took their weaving away. And that was one way to break the spirit of the people. These missionaries are very devious in different ways of how to create pain in the people and then convert them to another way of life. So that began a relationship for all those years. And I took those elders out with me. They met many other people in throughout the states. And they also had a vision about community. Then having been to Hopi, or sent there to Hopi later, and meet this old woman down on Hopi. I would say, there's an old woman you're supposed to meet. And then for her to, she said within 10 minutes, she knew the spirits had come, had sent her, me to her. And there'd been a lot of people coming and going in her life, and even one particular man from Helsinki here, he knew her, but he didn't have the destiny with her that I have. And that played itself out over the years. And I kept, for many years, I was traveling with these people. Sometimes in the smokehouse in Canada, sometimes at Hopi. Then my trip to Peru began. I was all over in this way. But there was something unfolding within me. I realized that I probably came in with a vision about family. And I came from a very healthy family. So all these years of searching with communities, what would be a healthy community? What's a really healthy community? And what is a healthy family? It was then in 89 that I first came through Finland on my way to USSR, because Raisa Gorbachev had heard about grandmother. And at that point in her life, grandmother, I was the only person she trusted to travel with. I took care of her. And then it was my destiny, obviously, to be seen by the spirit of Finland. Somewhere these destinies are unfolding. And along the way, it was so interesting because I lost contact with Joe in my usual way. And then one night, what had happened, I'd been hit by lightning twice the first time, and I had to go on a vision quest with the Lakota elders. And when I was leaving, after that week or so up in the mountains, the elder, Grace Spotted Eagle, said to me, "You take this pipe and you take it back to your community in New York." Well, I didn't have a community at that time, really. But she said, "You take it back, and the people are yearning for spirit. There's always a yearning for something for people. And you just hold pipe ceremonies on the full moon in your apartment." Well, we started maybe 10 people. It got so the apartment was jammed sometimes with 80 people. Whenever the elders came of different, whether it's Navajo, Hopi, Salish, Lakota, all these different elders wanted to come to my place. They felt the spirit was pure there. They didn't go to the community house, and there was some juju that went on about that. But then the night of the full moon, and someone came in and said that Joe Campbell had died. I was in such shock because I had lost contact with him for about 3 years. I hadn't seen him for about 3 years. And that ceremony that night was very, very strong. And the last person left around midnight. We started at 6 o'clock, and people didn't want to leave. That happens sometimes after ceremony because you feel so good, so connected. And I was really upset because I owe so much to that man. And I felt, I grieved a lot that I had not been there for him. And then time goes by. And one day I was out practicing my intuition. I have a list of my pimp. It tells me where to go next. And I was on the corner of 5th Avenue and 14th Street. And instead of going straight ahead, my voice said, "Go left." Okay. About 30 feet down here was a friend I had not seen for 4 or 5 years. We had a great reunion. And then the voice says, "Go north." And right in the middle of the next block is Joe's widow walking home to her apartment downtown. And I wasn't even sure she would remember me. And I said, "Jean." They used to call me Chuck more in those days. And she said, "Oh my goodness," she said, "I was just talking about you the other day at a gathering in Washington, D.C., how proud Joe was of you, of what had happened. I was surprised he knew some of these things, but everything gets around." And I walked her home that day. And that was that way of him, the spirit letting me know of the connection was still strong. So those ways, sometimes they were challenging. Yes, they are. You think you've lost the way, but oh my goodness, have I forgotten something, or am I going in the wrong direction? What came out of that original dream was a group in Utah that responded to my invitation to simply show up. I would go there, and it was about family. We met on the four turnings of the year as families. Families all coordinated together. We helped each other with their farms, building buildings, all of that. There was a weaving that we'd lost, and Joe talked about the loss of initiation, what religions had done. They wanted to dominate people's lives rather than interrelationship with the earth and what have you. So that had happened. And then we were not trying to be Indian. That was not the point. However, the native people heard about it. And after the first year, I just gave my show up. And after the first year, I was not there, but they were dancing out in this place called Snow Canyon. And I believe Grandmother from Hopi was there that time. But they danced all through the night. It was snowing. They had the fire going. And the next morning, from a hillside, comes two guys, and they're Ute medicine men, the northern Ute, actually. And this one man, Bear Boy, who became very, very much part of the family, said, "We're watching you during the night." He said, "You guys are doing something good, you know?" And they volunteered. They wanted to become part of it. And then the word spread. And then eventually, a Shoshone from Idaho, the old grandmother, heard about this group. And then she went, and oh, did she like it? So she goes home to her and tells her nephew. And this grandmother had kept a vision in her mind. Their spiritual dance of renewal is called Naraya. And it's about the spirits dancing around and then going up the Milky Way, dancing into the other realms. So the idea was maybe, because that they had been forbidden, the missionary said, "You must stop that. That's evil." So it was almost 80 years since nobody had danced that dance. But in her mind, she kept all these old songs alive. And that there was this one other young man who and his wife had joined the circle, and he's good for memory. He gets songs right away, all those medicine gifts. And then I used to go periodically to different dances. I would show up. And then one night they tried to bring the dance back, and it didn't work out there in Utah at all. But then the vision came to me, what about coming to New York? Let's see what happens in New York. And we actually got 35 people. We locked ourselves in a way in a big chamber at the Cathedral in New York City. And they liked me, the dean liked me because I've been doing some work for them. And that was, we're in our 29th year now. And we started with 35 people, and now about 2,000 people a year are dancing this dance, the revival. It's more of an updated version. And the dance came back alive on the reservation because they felt their spirit saying, "We have to dance again for our lives." And that's a way of the how the spirit works in its own way. So I have carried on that destiny. And when I came here with grandmother the first time, who knew that I would come back all these years? I was invited back first time to a big one of the Yoan Tzu song festivals in the midsummer. And I brought a couple of native people with me, musicians, and we sang at this big, what, 60,000, whatever, how many people are there? And then I was invited to come back and to lecture at some of the recovery gatherings from addictions, what have you. And then someone said, "Well, would you teach a workshop or two?" You know, okay. And then gradually, then 96 is when Four Winds was given a definition. And sometimes it, like with all little children, sometimes you fall down and then you pick up again. Our lives, all of our lives. And it stumbled the first few years a couple of times. We weren't sure what was going to happen. And here we are 23 years later. And like when Jean Erdman, Joe's widow, said to me that Joe was so proud of you, I feel huge pride in this community. And the need, we need our elders. We need those who, again, who have done their own, what you call inner journey to clear out and be there. They become wise. I don't know how wise I am. Having been hit by lightning, I've been three times. It rearranges your brain cells and everything else. I love life so much. And one of Joe's old statements was that for most people, life is a journey of sorrow. And if you're doing the work, you begin to joyfully join in with the sorrows. You can be there for other people. A number of years ago, I had gone back out to Utah for one of the dances, the Naraya dances. And I have said for years that happiness does not interest me. Happiness comes, happiness goes. There's a term we call causeless joy. And I've identified little Charlie in me as being an ecstatic. I used to laugh and giggle uncontrollably at times because, like, oh, this is so funny. And I had to go back and retrieve that. But that night after the dance, in a vision, I was given the sword of Charlemagne, who historically Charlemagne was here, an emperor centuries ago, the emperor of Germany and what have you. And I didn't know why. It was like, why me? I'm not a warrior, you know. I don't believe in all that, swords and all. But I found out 3 days later that the name of his sword is Joyeuse. The name of his sword is Joy. Part of that sword is in the Louvre in Paris today, that sword. Maybe I'll go visit one day. And then I felt confirmed again, joy. I'm here for joy. I'm here to embody joy and help joy. And there's something here for me. We're all of us. Needing to sort our past. Joe spoke oftentimes about Psyche's task to sit down and sort the seeds. In the old mythology, it's their mythology. What has value, what doesn't have value? What do I take forward, what do I not take forward? Today, in the world, trauma is running the world in so many ways. Traumatized people, attempting to control others, what have you. There's a very well-recognized man, he was Hungarian originally, now lives up in Canada. Gabor Maté is his name. And one of his quotes that I really appreciate, unless you transmute your trauma, you carry it forward. You pollute the future. There's some precise words, I'll let them come here a moment. That which you do not transmute, you transmit. And we have to learn, and then again, the way of initiation of the old traditions. Every initiation is a trauma, but you work through it. And then in the native way, you come out with more power, more medicine. My grandpa, he called me a son, Wallace Black Elk. until his late years, he would go up in the mountain every so often and he'd be pierced and hung in a crevice for 4 days and four nights, calling for more power, calling for to help people more. And there is that dedication of those old medicine people. To me, the shamans, although there is such a revival of interest, but to really become a person of enormous, I'm very careful about the word power, because that could be misused in so many ways, but to become a presence of energy. I was speaking to a woman yesterday about how in that shaman's way, that shaman, the piece of land here, I'm the caretaker of this land. And the Hopi were very clear about that. I'm just a caretaker of this land. And what happens on this land is up to me. Mother Earth is always here to help me. If I plant my seeds, she gives of her body that energy that makes the corn or the beans or the squash grow. I remember when I had to go up in the Rockies for my vision quest, we have a ritual, little tobacco ties, little strings of tobacco. You make a tie of those. And I had to make a 705 on one string. And your prayers are in there. It's for protection and what have you while you're up there. And then that night up there, and I was frightened because I'd been hit by lightning just weeks before. And the guys take you way up in the mountains, and then they put the string around you, and then they leave you. They go off. And all you have is a little tiny, like a little hut to go into, and you're naked. You have a blanket and your pipe. That's all you have. And during that night, a bear came. But the nature understands those things. That bear stood on that far side of that line. Remember that sound, that breath. Oh my God, I was freaked out. And yet I just stood there in awe. This great creature just standing there came to visit. So those are some of the memories that come forward. And as I get older, I was pretty sick a couple of years ago, and you can go back before that, I had some other issues. And then I'm still here. It's part of destiny. And then realizing that every time I come back, I'm not the person who left.